Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Did you guys catch Jon Stewart's blistering critique of the Trans-Pacific Partnership? No. That's because he's never mentioned it, and that's why Dinosaur Media is going down as the alt media continues to rise and will keep covering the stories that the via Comcast-controlled mouthpieces mustn't talk about. Let's begin this episode 220 of The New World Next Week with negotiators helping the TPP get even worse by caving on copyright term extensions, this via the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. New reports indicate that Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP negotiators, have agreed to language that would bind its 12 signatory nations to extend copyright terms to match the United States' already excessive length of copyright. This provision expands the reach of the controversial U.S. Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, or the Mickey Mouse Act, as it was called due to Disney's heavy lobbying, to countries of the Pacific region. Nations including Japan, New Zealand, Malaysia, and Canada would all be required to extend their terms and grant big content companies lengthy exclusive rights to works for no empirical reason. This means that all of the TPP's extreme enforcement provisions would apply to creative works for up to, or rather upwards, of 100 years. Negotiators have been made well aware that there is no economic rationale that can justify this extension for all of those Pacific nations. The fact that they've chosen to ignore what is, of course, a clear consensus among economists points to the fact that this agreement hasn't been driven by reason, but by the utter corruption of the process by lobbyists for multinational entertainment conglomerates who have twisted what is notionally a trade negotiation into a special interest money grab. Even as excessive copyright fails to even accomplish its aims, it creates a whole host of other problems. It would force everyone living in TPP signatory countries to pay a heavy price in continued royalties for content. The White House justifies the TPP by claiming it will promote economic growth and create jobs, but the continued enclosure of culture under exorbitant copyright terms would have the opposite effect. The copyright term extension provisions in the Trans-Pacific Partnership embody everything that's wrong with the TPP's digital policy rules, namely that those rules are put there for and by the corporate interests that are privy to these secret negotiations at the expense of users and the public interest. Now, James, I feel compelled to note again, as a mainstream media charade is playing out right now here in the States, that this is precisely the kind of news that Brian Williams or Jon Stewart have not and will not report on. We've been covering the TPP on New World Next Week since at least 2013, and even in 2012, Slate called the TPP, quote, the most important trade agreement that we know nothing about. And I would say the very reason many people know nothing about the TPP is because those most trusted newsmen are fronts for the very same multinational corporations that, well, you know, James.
Yeah, exactly right. And let me bid a fond farewell to, or an unfond farewell to Brian Williams and John Leibowitz. Let's never forget, Stewart is just the stage name. And yes, exactly, they will always avoid these types of issues. So let's delve into these issues here. And I hope that people will go and click through that to that EFF link that we have in the show notes about this story, because they have that link to the PDF demonstrating that there is absolutely no even imaginable economic benefit to this copyright extension. And just reading from the Hargreaves report that they quote in that PDF, economic evidence is clear that the likely deadweight loss to the economy exceeds any additional incentivizing effect which might result from the extension of copyright term beyond its present levels. This is doubly clear for retrospective extension to copyright term, given the impossibility of incentivizing the creation of already existing works or work from artists already dead. So, exactly right. There's not even an argument to be made that this has any economic benefit, on top of the fact that, as I hope my listeners will be aware, intellectual property doesn't exist. It doesn't exist anywhere except in the courts. It's not something that arises from natural law. There's no natural rights argument for intellectual property. There's nothing in nature that says I can't play a chord this way on the guitar, followed by this chord, followed by this chord. It's a completely artificial construction that, of course, is only there there to incentivize and to provide economic benefits to corporations like Disney, of course. Every time Mickey Mouse is due to come into the public domain, there you go. It's suddenly extended. So, yes, this is absolutely just another nail in the coffin of what the TPP represents and what all of these trade deals represent. And the insidious part of this, of course, is that it's being done behind the scenes. And interestingly, I just got an email from a user, Richard, who emailed me to say that eBay just sent him an email asking him to send a letter to his member of Congress lobbying for supporting small business trade online. And they make it sound like this e-commerce thing that they're trying to go for. But what they are actually trying to get people to do is to write their, to badger their congressman to pass the Trade Promotion Authority and Customs Reauthorization. I'll throw in an FAS.org link about this, but basically this is the bill under which Congress gives and cedes a lot of its authority over to the president to go and do these types of behind-the-scenes negotiations. And, of course, eBay and all the other big-name players in this want this type of legislation passed so that the president can do these secret negotiations, so that these trade deals can be passed. It is a complex and disgusting web. We'll throw the links in the show notes so you can go and start piecing it together. But surprise, surprise, these trade deals are absolutely designed to not benefit you in any way, shape, or form, only to hurt and hinder you. And so that's why these must be opposed. And that's why the people who will not talk about them must be exposed.
Mm-hmm. And the president that you mentioned is the guy who just went on television and noted, well, sometimes we have to twist countries' arms to get them to do what we want to do. So replace countries with corporations, as the corporations mostly have, and you get a lot of truth coming out, James. And I think a lot of the things that we try to put on the record with the New World Next Year 2015 episode, I think as we're looking at them as 2015 rolls on, the trade deals, the exposure of corrupt so-called leaders, I think continues apace. And that EFF article, as you know, it does have a lot of great info in there. I just kept to the main points germane to this episode. But again, in all the cases, follow the links, go do more research for yourself. James, our second story this week comes from globalresearch.ca, an article written by M. Oliver Haydorn, The Case to Reinstate the Bank of Canada. There's a really interesting legal case playing out in Canada at the moment where concerned citizens and a group called the Committee for Monetary and Economic Reform filed a lawsuit back in December 2011 in federal court to try and force a restoration of the Bank of Canada to its mandated purposes. In essence, they want the Bank of Canada to provide interest-free loans to the federal, provincial, and municipal governments as provided for in the Bank of Canada Act. This money would be used to finance public expenditures whenever there's a budgetary deficit. Apparently, the federal government used to borrow interest-free, to at least some extent, from the Bank of Canada up until 1974. But at present, governments borrow all of the necessary money, apart from any bonds they might sell to the public, from private banks at the going rate of interest. Canadians are economically burdened with the resultant debt servicing charges because the Bank of Canada does not make use of its prerogatives in the interest of the Canadian public. Their case is being prosecuted by Rocco Galati, who's widely considered to be Canada's top constitutional lawyer. So we can break a lot of this down, and the lawsuit has been explained on our man Dan Dick's website, pressfortruth.ca, in the following terms. Two Canadians and a Canadian economic think tank confront the global financial powers in the Canadian federal court. The Canadians plead for declarations that would restore the use of the Bank of Canada for the benefit of Canadians and remove it from the control of international private entities whose interests and directives are placed above the interest of Canadians and the primacy of the Constitution of Canada. Now, James, this sounds a hell of a lot like the same situation we kind of have here in the States, where a Federal Reserve loans all of the money to the Congress, despite the fact Congress has the constitutional right and duty to print the money, right, James?
Well, yes, it's functioning in the same way, but the Bank of Canada is actually a different beast entirely, because the Federal Reserve was created specifically as this private banking cartel, and that's what it is at its core. The Bank of Canada is actually a public utility. It's just not being used that way. The private banks are making the money as debt money. So this is important because, at the very least, this does offer Canadians a way into the conversation about monetary reform and what type of monetary system we want in the first place. But you mentioned Dan Dix and Press for Truth, who've been doing the yeoman's work on this for the last 4 years since this lawsuit was first kicked off. And I will direct people to his most recent video video on this, Comer versus the Bank of Canada, where he lays this out, I think, in the exact terms that I would, which is to say, it's a good thing that this is happening, it's a good thing it's proceeding, and however this eventuates, and let's keep this in perspective, all that's been granted is the ability for this lawsuit to go ahead. I mean, nothing's been won at this point. So let's temper our happiness at this point. But still, having said that, even if this goes ahead, and even if it does go through, and the Bank of Canada is used to issue debt-free money to the government again, is that really ultimately what we want? Is that the be-all and end-all of this situation? And I would answer, as Dan, I think, points out it with a lot of detail in his video, the answer is not really. I mean, it would be better than having the banksters directly controlling the money supply, but it's not that much better, unless you believe that a Harper or a Justin Trudeau or whoever is the next goon to get into political office is going to be a better steward of the public trust than the banksters. They are just puppets of the banksters, and the idea that this is going to be used solely for good, you know, infrastructure projects and sunshine and rainbows and puppy dogs, and the politicians will be very clear and very, very careful not to create inflation. They'll be very good about that, right? Of course not. It will just be a big meal ticket for whatever politician can offer the public the most out of this money from nothing. So I think the real answer is, as always, a truly free competition in currencies. Why is the Bank of Canada the one that gets to determine the monetary reality for the country? Why isn't it left up to everyone to compete equally, and why do we have these laws that determine what currency really is? So I think that's the deeper issue. Again, I'll throw people to Dan Dix for that examination, and hopefully I will be getting an interview on this from someone involved with the lawsuit sometime in the near future. Back when this started in 2011, I tried and tried and tried to get anyone to do an interview about this, and no one ever responded to me. So hopefully I've got a lead this time, so I hope this will turn out differently, but we'll see. Anyway, if anyone is out there who has any contact with Comer or these people, please get them in touch with me and we'll set something up, and we'll see where it goes from here. So again, I think this is an important window into the monetary reform conversation for Canadians, so at least let's use it for that and get the word out about this this issue and how it affects the average Canadian. $20 billion a year in interest paid to the money that's being loaned to the Canadian government that doesn't need to have interest on it at all.
James, let's throw in one other economic note on this story, too, on this New World Next Week. HSBC tax dodge revelations are just the tip of the iceberg, as the AFP reports. The former HSBC employee who leaked sensational secret documents alleging the bank helped wealthy customers dodge millions of dollars in taxes warned just the other day that the revelations are just the tip of the iceberg. But let's move to our third and final story this week as we continue our work in 2015 to bring you some good news. And you are invited to contribute to that conversation using hashtag good news next week on Twitter. And we'll take this one, James, from althealthworks.com. Moms crash Monsanto shareholder meeting and pass share owner proxy access resolution. I'm imploring you to choose a new direction, said Zin Honeycutt, founder of Moms Across America, at Monsanto's headquarters on January 30th. Stop poisoning our children. Honeycutt spoke at the Monsanto shareholders meeting in St. Louis as part of a rally at the company's world headquarters, along with Organic Consumers Association, Some of Us, an economic advocacy organization for citizens over corporations, and, of course, Moms Across America supporters from across America. Their aim was to educate Monsanto shareholders and the executives on the stunning health consequences of their chemical and GMO seed giant products, as well as to ask for shareholder support for what was called item number 5. That's share owner proxy access. The Moms Across America website calls that an essential mechanism for accountability supported by institutional investors and the SEC. Now, James, it's not often I have to go to the Wall Street Journal to kind of suss out a situation, but they have an article, Monsanto Shareholders Approve Non-Binding Proxy Access Proposal. So in doing a little more research in this, James, in searching proxy access, one of the main stories that seems to come up is SEC okays Whole Foods proxy access proposal, meaning that, again, I think the food revolution is winning. And we can see it in these kind of evasive maneuvers by Big Food. So what this proxy access does is basically put someone who might not agree with the company line on the board. And non-binding, of course, we see that a lot of times. But I think, again, this kind of shows they're having to bend in a lot of ways because they know we're finding out about what's going on and they know that we're making changes to our lives. James, you found this good news story. Tell me your thoughts on it.
Well, I think that the way you phrase it there is important. It is like bending these corporations slowly towards our will, and it can work, as it has for example, taking the bovine growth hormone largely out of the dairy milk and things like that. It can work in little ways, exerting a lot of pressure on little pressure points to bend corporations in ways that will hopefully at least make them somewhat more palatable. Obviously, what we want is Monsanto to shatter into a million pieces and those pieces to be scattered to the winds, but unlike Hollywood movies, that's unlikely to eventuate. The way this will work is a million activists exerting power on a million different pressure points to get this, to at the very least, to educate the public about what's going on so they can avoid the corporation entirely, which I think is the real way to get rid of these corporations. But anyway, my hat's off to Zen Honeycutt for doing this, and again, 99% of activism is action, so anyone getting off their butt and actually doing something like crashing a shareholders meeting and arguing in favor of this proxy access, that's something. That is something, and I do applaud people for doing that. Is it going to end Monsanto tomorrow? No. But is it going to do something towards, at the very, very least, again, educating the public and getting more awareness, and also making sure that the shareholders realize they're not living in a little bubble. They are actually part of this corporation that is a behemoth and that is violently, or not violently, but viciously opposed by many people around the world. And so, again, it's like confronting politicians, We Are Change style or whatever. Is it going to change those politicians and what they're doing? Probably not. But at any rate, it makes them aware that they're not living in a little reality bubble, that they can do whatever they want with impunity. And it also helps to educate the public while we're at it. So, my hat's off to anyone doing this type of action.
And they are doing this type of action. Let's throw in a couple of other good news notes and noting people taking action, like Bo in Iowa, who had his letter to the editor published in his local paper about water fluoridation. And he tweeted us to let us know that his letter was published. And he feels that excitement. You go, oh, my God, this actually does something. And you're taking part and you see that it's not always some brick wall that you can't break through, that a lot of times, again, the media will take a press release if you send it to them. Meanwhile, just as you noted, James, and one of the latest developments in this, Breyers ice cream, big ice cream here in America, drops milk tainted with Monsanto's RBST. And a little bit of other good green news, Colorado may refund millions of dollars to Coloradoans in weed taxes, because they're making way more money than they ever even thought they would once they actually let a plant grow from the earth and use it to build and grow things. The other sort of related or unrelated, rather, stories we'll cover with hashtag New World next week that, again, all the other amazing audience members and listeners and folks out there submit to us, because we couldn't keep up with all of it. But it is important to note that the inevitable war with ISIS has finally been declared in some ways. Again, we find the phony left completely complicit in more war of aggressions under their phony Nobel Prince of Peace Prize. Meanwhile, Ukrainians rage against the military draft, and Samsung's smart TV allows spying on its users. So basically, you can be spied and lied to, or you can not hate the media and become the media, James.
That's pretty much it. I think that's it for this week, unless you have anything else to add.
That's it, man. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Take care. Talk to you next week.